Welcome back. It was 45 years ago this weekend that space history was made when astronaut Neil Armstrong became the first man to step on the surface of the moon.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
St. Louis was right in the middle of that historic moment with much of the U.S. space program hardware, a product of McDonnell Douglas. The man who oversaw the operation for NASA was Gene Kranz, flight director of the Apollo and Gemini missions. Kranz is a 1954 alumnus of St. Louis University's Parkes College of Engineering, Aviation, and Technology. He recently returned to our area to meet with students at Parkes. St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra caught up with him at the St. Louis Science Center and asked if, as a child, long before a space program, he could ever imagine that one day he'd be involved with rockets and sending humans to the moon.
Space was not in my game plan. It didn't exist at that time. I was a pilot. That's all I wanted to do. And I was real happy in the job. I was flying on the station in Formosa for a while. And I landed the aircraft in October 57. My crew chief ran up and said, you know, Russians have launched a Sputnik. And I said, well, what's a Sputnik? He said, well, they have a little satellite going around the Earth. And I said, oh, that's pretty neat. And then I went back to worrying about flying.
Now, you're not quite telling me the truth, because I happen to know that you wrote a thesis in high school that had something to do with going to the moon.
I was a reader of pulp fiction. I read virtually all of the early accounts of life outside the Earth's atmosphere. And I looked for a senior thesis that was somewhat different and something I felt reasonably comfortable with and familiar with. And I thought, gee, that'd be neat. My thesis title was Design and Possibilities of an Interplanetary Rocket to the Moon. The only problem I had, I got them to the moon, but I couldn't figure out a way to get them back. So I left them there.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your childhood. What was it like? I know your father died when you were 7, I think. How did that change you and maybe contribute to the leader that you later became?
It was really a challenge because I knew very little about my father. We lived in the south end of Toledo, Ohio. But as soon as he died, my mother wanted to get us away from the wrong side of the tracks. She wanted us to go out to West Toledo. And somehow or other, she found the money to obtain a house out there, make a down payment at a house. And she immediately set about to turning into a boarding house. And we moved most of the family, most of the time, into one bedroom. I had two other sisters, myself and my mother. And the other two rooms were filled with GIs because we lived very close to the USO. So we'd have the soldiers, sailors, and airmen throughout the World War II living in our house. And these were the inspiration. And I started building models. Models of anything I could see and do. I could turn poker chips into the wheels for a tank. And a lot of the Navy people that would stay at the house would send me boxes of balsa wood. And balsa wood was a strategic material. So all of a sudden I had not only the materials and skill, but I mean it was to the point where I could build things that would really fly.
You have a personal connection to St. Louis, I think, early on in your career.
I got into St. Louis University and Parkes College in sort of a roundabout fashion. I was originally had won an appointment to the Naval Academy. I wanted to be a naval aviator, but I was working at A&P warehouses, and my diet was brownie and chocolate milk for the best part of a year. So when it came time to take the physical, I busted the physical twice in a row. So I was now looking for an alternate path, and I had one of my teachers in Central Catholic basically kept me pumped up, and she found a Ohio Elks Association scholarship that would provide $500 for a loan. And it was that which allowed me to come to Parkes, and I carried that loan all the way through my schooling, and that covered the majority of the expenses. It's amazing. You could go to college for $500, cover most of the expenses in those days.
Not anymore. So you've done a lot in your long career, but you're probably most well known as the flight director for NASA's Apollo space program, a role you took on, I think, when you were only 31 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, I was fortunate to be at the right place at the right time. I had the background. The most interesting part about my journey to the Apollo program was I was a young flight test engineer, and I saw an advertisement in Aviation Week magazine. They were forming a space task group. And I thought, gee, that'd be pretty cool job. Fired in an application. I was never interviewed. I was hired right off the application. I got a phone call that said, are you still interested? I said, yes. We reported to Langley Field in Virginia. Sat around in sort of a bullpen with a group of other people trying to find where they're going to be working. Gentleman comes up to me and says, I'm Chris Kraft. I'm your boss. You're working in operations. I want you to go down to the Cape, write a countdown, write some mission rules, and when you're through, we'll come down and launch. 2 weeks after I reported duty, I was writing a countdown for the early launch.
That's amazing. For people who may not know, what does a flight director do?
Flight director has probably the simplest job description in all of America today. It's only one sentence long. It says the flight director may take any actions necessary for crew safety and mission success. During the course of a mission, he is the highest authority and no one can overrule him during the course of a mission. His job is to lead a team, focus the team, develop all the planning that's essential to get the job done. And during the course of a mission, I look at it as sort of the quarterback of a team in the red zone. My expendable, my consumable is the clock. And the key thing is don't let any of my players on the team run the clock out on me. Make sure they understand what needs to be done, the time it needs to be done, the decisions that need to be made. And then with sufficient time for me to assess the directions they're giving me and basically relay it to the flight crews for execution.
You were the flight director for Apollo 11, the first space flight to put men on the moon 45 years ago. Can you describe a little bit that experience?
There's some events in your life that you'll never forget. I had a team of young men. They were all men at that time, whose average age was 26. We had trained very well. I had full confidence in this team. We had some difficulties in our training process of working out the landing decision process, because there's some point in the landing phase where if you let the crew get descending too fast, you fall into what's called the dead man's box and you've lost a crew. The real mission came along, and I have to make the go-no-go. Are we going to go down to the moon this time or not? I have no reason to terminate the mission at this time, so basically I give the crew the go for powered descent. By this time, we recognize we're going to be landing long. We're not going to be landing in the place where we expected to land. We're now starting to see we're moving down towards what they call the toe of the footprint. And we know there's boulders down there, there's craters down there, and the crew's going to have to take over manual attitude control and find a proper landing site. But in the process of doing this now, I'm watching the clock. And the clock indicates that very shortly we should have what we call a low-level alarm. Now, I don't know if you've ever driven in your car with a gas tank reading empty, but that's exactly the position we're in right now, because we've come to a point in our ability to measure the fuel in the tank where basically we can't measure it anymore, but we know by experience we have 2 minutes of fuel remaining at a 30% throttle setting. Totally silent in mission control right now with the exception of one voice, and that's my propulsion guy telling me the seconds of fuel remaining. And you go through 90 seconds, and then there's a pause, and we're listening to the crew. They're giving us altitude, descent rate. Then it's 60 seconds, and then it's 45 seconds, 30 seconds, and then about the time it's fifth, all of a sudden we recognize we've landed on the surface, and the crew is going through shutdown. And then it sunk in where the people were cheering and applauding and everything else. And the crew had roughly about 10 seconds to celebrate and then back to work.
Now, you said earlier that you were a pilot, a military pilot. Did you ever want to be an astronaut yourself?
I did in the very early days. In fact, it was probably in the first 6 to 9 months, because I really admired these guys. But I really realized that I'm going to fly more missions in my lifetime than any of these crews will ever fly. And I basically got the best job in the entire space program.
Because you basically got to participate in it from the very beginning right through.
Yeah, I flew over 33 missions as flight director, and in my career I was responsible for over about 120.
Wow. In December of 1972, NASA launched Apollo 17, the sixth and last mission to send humans to the moon. How did you feel when that phase of the space program ended?
I saw that phase coming. The teams in mission control saw that phase coming. And I was the flight director that launched Gene Cernan and his crew from Earth, and I also launched them off the surface of the moon. So basically I saw the launch phase from both ends of it. And one of the responsibilities of the flight director, as you leave the surface of the moon, is the White House always has a message ready to relay to the crew once they're safely in orbit. And President Nixon's words really drove this thing home, because he said, this may be the last time in the century. And it says, it's just that this is a hell of a way. And it really got us. But that's the job. We got the crew up in orbit and checked the spacecraft out and got them on their way back home.
Americans today seem to have more or less lost interest in the space program. There are probably people who don't know that the space shuttle flights have ended or that we even still have a space program. Why should we care? Why should Americans care about a space program?
I believe there's many reasons. I think the first reason is our nation is an exceptional nation. And I believe that it's important for us to maintain this belief, because we are representative of the best characteristics of a democracy. That basically the people of the world look to us, recognizing that we are powerful, not because of our economic might, but because of our beliefs. I think it's important that as a nation we carry that forward. And to do this, we have to demonstrate we are capable of doing very difficult and challenging things. Space is difficult and challenging. I think it can and did unite the nation at that period of time, but united the world. Space then creates the technology, the very difficult technology that we need to keep the economic engine of our country going. We need to get that engine started so we can actually provide for the peoples of our nation. We need to get the a healthy set of industries that basically are made in America right now, where we build and create these things that cannot be replicated in any other part of the world. We need to challenge the colleges and universities for the curriculum they need to continue to expand human knowledge, and we need some direction for our young people to look forward to, so they will be motivated to do the hard things.
One more question. How do you envision the future of space exploration? What should be our next goal? What should be our next Apollo 11?
There are a lot of perspectives on space. The NASA currently, one is currently to go rendezvous with an asteroid, etc. I believe that's too limited a mission. I think you need a broader mission. I think we need to really look at establishing human presence in space beyond the near-Earth environment like we have in the International Space Station. I think going back to the moon and establish a long-term base in the moon would make a heck of a lot of sense. Recently, I saw in one of the former NASA administrators talk about Mars flyby in 2021, which is only 7 years from now. Well, we have the knowledge, the books have been written, we have the technology, we have all of these things. All we got to do is the will to get it. And we have a spacecraft called the Orion that basically is capable of transporting people there. So I think that Griffin's proposal to do the Mars flyby in 7 years is absolutely within our ballpark. All we need to do is to have the dream and the will to do it.
That's Gene Kranz, Director of Operations for the Moon Landing, which occurred 45 years ago Sunday, speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra. By the way, it was 45 years ago today that Apollo 11 was launched. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about summertime things to do in the St. Louis region with Amanda Doyle, author of Finally, a locally produced guidebook to St. Louis by and for St. Louisans, neighborhood by neighborhood. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.